All parents must remember the moment when they first held their children, the tiny, crumpled face emerging, an entire new person from the hospital blanket. I extended my hands and took my daughter in my arms. I was so overwhelmed that I could hardly think. After the birth, I wandered outside for a while so that mother and child could rest. It was 3 in the morning, late February in New England. There was ice on the sidewalk and a cold drizzle in the air. As I stepped from the curb, a thought popped into my head. When my daughter is my age, almost 10 billion people will be walking the earth. I stopped in mid-stride. I thought, how is that going to work? Like other parents, I want my children to be comfortable in their adult lives. But in the hospital parking lot, this suddenly seemed unlikely. 10 billion mouths, I thought. How can they possibly be fed? 20 billion feet. How will they be shod? 10 billion bodies. How will they be accommodated? Is the world big enough, rich enough, for all these people to flourish? Or have I brought my children into a time of general collapse? When I began as a journalist, I envisioned myself, romantically, as an eyewitness to history. I wanted to chronicle the important events of my time. Only after I began work did the obvious question occur: what are those important events? My first article, essentially the caption for a photograph of a bad automobile accident, certainly didn't document one. But what was the standard? Hundreds of years from now, what will historians view as today's most significant developments? For a long time, I believed that the answer was discoveries in science and technology. I wanted to learn about the curing of diseases, the rise of computer power, the unraveling of the mysteries of matter and energy. Later, though, it seemed to me that what was important was less the new knowledge than what it had enabled. In the 1970s, when I was in high school, about 1 out of every 4 people in the world was hungry. Undernourished, to use the term preferred by the United Nations. Today, the UN says, the figure is 1 out of 10. Footnote. In absolute terms, the decrease seems less impressive. Several hundred million still live in destitution. In recent years, moreover, the number of hungry has risen a bit. Researchers disagree on whether this reversal is a long-term problem or a temporary blip due to violence, Southwest Asia, parts of Africa, and falling commodity prices, which have lowered national incomes in some places. Nonetheless, a child born in the 21st century has less chance of emerging into a life of absolute want than at any other century in known history. In those 4 decades, the global average lifespan has risen by more than 11 years, with most of the increase occurring in poor places. Hundreds of millions of people in Asia, Latin America, and Africa have lifted themselves from destitution into something like the middle class. In the annals of humankind, nothing like this surge of well-being has occurred before. It is the signal accomplishment of this generation and its predecessor. This enrichment has not occurred evenly or equitably. Millions upon millions are not prosperous, and millions more are falling behind. Nonetheless, on a global level, the level of 10 billion, the increase in affluence is undeniable. The factory worker in Pennsylvania and the farmer in Pakistan may both be struggling and angry, but they are also, by the standards of the past, wealthy people. Today, the world has about 7.3 billion inhabitants. Most demographers believe that around 2050, the world's population will reach 10 billion, or a bit less. About this time, human numbers will probably begin to level off. As a species, we will be around replacement level, each couple having, on average, just enough children to replace themselves. All the while, economists say, the world's development should continue, however unevenly, however slowly. The implication is that when my daughter is my age, a sizable percentage of the world's 10 billion souls will be middle class. Jobs, homes, cars, fancy electronics, a few occasional treats. These are what the affluent multitudes will want. Why shouldn't they? And though the lesson of history is that the great majority of these men and women will make their way, it is hard not to be awed by the magnitude of the task facing our children. A couple of billion jobs, a couple of billion homes, a couple of billion cars, billions and billions of occasional treats. Can we provide these things? That is only part of the question. The full question is, can we provide these things without wrecking much else?